that.
I think it would do well with the Concord guy.
As well as the local color.
He's a little like me, a little hard of hearing, but he wears a hearing aid, I think, some of the time. If you can get a guy interested, he can tell you a lot of.
I think probably like us, we don't know exactly what you want. You almost have to ask the questions to.
Yeah, I think that's true, and yet it's also association, and you never know what's going to come up.
No,
sure you don't.
One of the other things that I wanted to ask about that a number of people have spoken about are the old apple trees. And I see you have some out here, but I don't.
When we first came up here, looking out this way, there's an area about an acre, I would think.
Orchard.
That was strictly an orchard.
And it had the
we
old
harvested
apples.
Bushels. Of course, that was 40, just about 40 years ago.
And then water from the barn.
Yeah, and it was my own fault.
The
water from the overflow from the tub in the barn started running down that way. I don't know why it didn't before, but and every year there'd be another one that would die out. Instead of my going down there and
channeling
it where it should have been,
I don't think
it
we
now,
realized
it's too
what
late.
Was happening either.
But we had all kinds of apples.
There was blue
parmain
and what they used to call a strawberry apple.
Yeah, I can't even remember the names of them.
Early Mac and Late Mac, and there's a banana apple. And these down here, what, Famules?
There probably was
more than... Titoskis?
And snow apple, your father.
I'll bet you there were 15 different types of apples. And there were probably 40 trees in all.
I would love to get some of the old varieties and bring the orchard back. But
of course, when we came up here, my folks were alive, and they used to come up here a lot. And my dad knew the kinds of apples. But you know, we never questioned him about what went on here.
What was that?
Is that a bird?
I don't know.
We feed the birds out there.
We've got a couple of bird feeders out there, but...
Well, your father must have been pleased when he bought this place.
Yes. Yeah. We didn't think about it as being the Bragg Farm so much when we decided to come up here. And we really hadn't got really into it that much. But it is. We think it's kind of nice.
Oh,
we had 440 acres. It was really, we bought three farms that had been put together. Actually, from this corner up here, out, and it's Town Highway 18, they call it on the map. We owned everything that abutted the road except a small section that Ward Lumber Company owned. And up over the years, we have sold off to different, we have really developed that Town Highway 18. There isn't a house up there, but what we sold a piece of land except this one right in the corner.
Mm-hmm. And there's some very nice
and
houses.
And I don't think
there.
There's one there, but what is a nice, it's a nice house. It's a very, it's been, we've been lucky.
But
it
was,
well
it was land that wasn't good farmland, wasn't even good land for heifer pastures, you know. It was pretty rocky and, but it was open because we'd run cattle up in there, so it was. I don't know what the noise was, but...
Huh. Yeah, you never... Bird fly into the window. So, your father... let me go back one more time. It was your great-grandfather that first came up here. And where did he come from?
They came from Massachusetts. Or Connecticut.
Ipswich, Mass.
Yeah, to
and
Warren.
Connecticut. To Warren, but actually, it was...
My great-great-grandfather,
William Bragg, Azra's father, came in
from
1849
Warren
and from Warren up here. And then he died living with Azra.
With Azra, yeah.
And And then Asher had a son, William, who was Willis's right. grandfather. And so it would have been great, great yeah. grandfather. But
so they've been in Feaston since 1849.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I don't know, we haven't really, I
we've
don't
got to do some more record searching. Yeah. I think they came to a farm yeah. just a little bit lower down, which must have joined this yeah. at that time.
But in the early years, a little booklet there, they tell about he was, at that time when that was written, he was the largest landowner in Feaston.
Is that right?
Yeah, the mm-hmm. farm apparently, well, I take that back, it was the largest farm in Feaston. I don't
largest
know
if, farm, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he was.
And
like,
how large was it at that? That was the whole...
I don't think he owned as much as we do, because there's two farms. One they call the Blair Farm was 120 acres. And the McCoyne farm was like 80 acres, so this was about 220 acres.
220, yeah.
Or
240. 200. But Faxton was a pretty thriving community. It had 9 schools, and there was a little school right down at the intersection here. And every one of those schools had like 40 students in it, 38, 40 students. They were all farming families. A lot with Irish backgrounds and all big families that...
Now, is Sugarbush in Warren or is it in Faxton?
Sugarbush North. Glen Ellen is in Faxton.
Yes.
But Sugarbush
Sugar
itself
is in Warren.
Mad River is in Faxton.
Mad
yes.
River, yeah. So was, that Faxton goes...
They usually say Waitsfield because we don't have a post office. But,
I see.
But Mad River and Sugarbush North, they're both in the town of Faxton.
Okay, yeah, I've got to look at a map, but mm-hmm. I have a pretty general idea mm-hmm. of where Faxton.
Really, Faxton goes down within maybe 1,000 feet of Route 100,
very
pretty
close,
much down yeah. towards Moortown.
Yeah.
It comes down to the pretty much the foot of the
mm-hmm.
mountains. As you go down towards Waitsfield, the substation is in Faxton. But Allen Lumber is in Waitsfield. The line is right by the power station there. So it's fairly close.
Okay. Yeah, I realize that because as you drive down 100, you see the roads coming and it says Faxton
yeah.
mm-hmm.
every...
North, central, south. Yeah.
I think... we've at times looked through the land records in Faxton and it seems as though people swapped places or sold theirs and bought others. It was a kind of a business-like or fun. It seemed like every little while they'd be swapping around. They don't do that anymore.
Did your great-grandfather have sheep up here?
They never have mentioned it in any of these letters, and I don't remember. No, I don't think so. I don't know why I say that either. I don't think she ever wrote about anything about the sheep. It was always the young stock.
The barn photo that Emily wrote on doesn't mention anything
no,
for sheep. I don't know where I got that.
And
right
some
here.
Of the letters they had chickens because in late years Azro's job was to take care of the chickens and gather the eggs and that type of thing. No, I think it's been pretty much it was dairying and. Surviving, they, big gardens and well, they talk quite a lot about the sugaring. They apparently had 2 sugar places, and that was a big thing. And tell about how much they got for sugar. And I guess sugar more than syrup was the way that was. I suppose they could store it easier or
yeah,
ship it easier, and it was. Boiled down more, so...
And I guess they also used it as sugar.
Yeah, yeah.
This is off the subject. You were talking about what damaged the farm.
Oh,
yeah, that's
God.
A total...
Well, that was taken the next day after the...
Mm. And did you go right to... did you stay open?
That's me and that's my brother.
Oh, my gosh.
No, we had to move. We moved immediately from there down... on Bridge Street to the Blue Building. That was empty, and we continued the store business until 1948. That was 1944. And Carl sold to Doc and Bob Bisbee, a father and son combination. They operated it a while, and then Bob was a sheet metal. He'd learned this after he got out of the service, the son, and his dad, Doc Bisbee, they owned the store. And it was then they moved up to Irisville, as where Bisbee's Hardware, and that's where the name comes from, for these two Bisbees. But that was the next morning after the...
Mm. Must have been pretty depressing.
Boy, it was.
Mm. And did people just join in and help you clean up? No,
after everybody came to watch it, and afterwards everybody went their own way, and it was, boy, for weeks we were shoveling out that stuff. And you know how that stuff smells, too.
And it gets fire. In your clothes, yeah, and your hair and everything.
Yeah.
Mm. So there was there an apartment up above it?
Yes. Yeah, there were people actually. That is where my folks moved when they sold the Red House next to the Howard Bank. They moved up over the store, and we lived there until 1939. And then my folks bought the little yellow house that's right by the bakery down here, right across from the shopping center.
Yes.
The little yellow house is still there, and they had a barn. We lived there in 1939, and Erling's folks came to town, and they lived up over the store. They moved in up over the store after my folks moved out. That's how I met her. I was working down on the downstairs, and she was upstairs. Then they moved to Stowe. Her dad was in the Forestry Service when I met him, and that was back in the days of the CCCs, were just winding down. They had a site camp over here in Faiston, why he came to Waitsfield, and then that was moved out, and he went to Moscow, to Stowe. It was moved over there, and they lived in Stowe, and Erling graduated from Stowe High School. But then there was another family moved in there, and they were actually living there when that burned. I remember people showed up, and while this other building on this side was burning, we knew that we weren't going to save the apartment, so we moved everything out that they had down out of it, so they didn't lose any of their furniture.
Well, that's good. So you had time.
What's that?
You did have some time.
Yeah, people were there to do what they could, but I thought you meant afterwards. This was one of the things that the Waitsfield Faiston Telephone Company, it was a service they offered, was a fire alarm. Too short, three times was a fire alarm, and I'm sure that was sent out because they wanted help. That was the only way that, this was like 2 o'clock in the morning that this started. The way we feel it had happened, this other building that housed the telephone office, downstairs at this time was a secondhand place. It had been a barber shop, but it was a secondhand place. And up over it, the secondhand place, over one side, there was people living there. And then there was another apartment. And the guy that lived up in one of those other apartments had spread ashes out in the back during the day. And we think that it started there because he woke up and the fire was going, and I guess he pounded on the wall or something and got him in the other apartment awake, and then to the telephone office. And then she called Carl, because Early and I were living right next to the Masonic Hall, just a step down there, down in the basement. And how we knew about it, they'd already called my father, and he and my mother came down to do something, and my mother came over and rapped on the bedroom window and said, "Hey, the store's on fire." And obviously went over, but there was a lot of people that helped to try to do things to move out those other people. And as I say, they tried to get the switchboard out, but that was no doing.
And did you get stuff from the store out where it was burning, or?
Not too much of it. Not too much of it.
Because they were stealing it, so.
But I say, the people were stealing stuff. I know there was one guy came in, he had on bib overalls, and he came out with an axe stuck down the front of it. So it was during World War II when things were scarce. Metal items were scarce, canned goods, sugar, everything, you know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you don't. But
I do. No, I remember the rationing.
So people were stealing more than they were helping. And so finally Carl said, "That's enough." And he locked the door. But I think that rack out on the front there was where they had bulk cookies. It seems as though it's a...
That's a great picture. So you have a number of photographs for the Historical Society.
This is one that I took, and the reason, I don't know how the people that were running the Valley Paint Store, they're out of business now. I gave them a copy like that, and they gave it to the fellow upstairs that developed pictures. He gave that to Earlene.
This is Willis, and this is his brother Merrill. You're in the picture. His brother Merrill there. This is Willis.
He's with the uniform.
Yeah. This was the original barns before they built the big one.
Oh, my gosh.
And on the back of it, I was just reading, Emily has listed the barns. The short barn, the long barn, the heifer barn, the ox barn, but she doesn't say anything about sheep.
I don't ever remember hearing him say anything about sheep.
And the horsepower. Oh, this is the one
you
were talking about.
Those barns were all torn down in order to build this bigger one. But is that the one where they're sawing wood?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You know, obviously they took that because there was action, which you very seldom see. Wouldn't anybody waste a shot of work.
It's a great photograph. And who are the people in it?
I don't know.
Did she list them?
I don't know that we, I don't think Emily listed them on the back.
Sawing wood at Grandpa Bragg's. Look at the long pile of logs. This shows the old barns. Upper barn, ox, heifer, lower barn, short, stable, long. We always had plenty of wood.
It was
a cold house. Six rooms? Six stoves. And that was the house that was cold because of the shrinkage.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great
clue. I don't remember whether we tried to identify the people there or not. You're looking for the...
I thought we had a picture of it. That's the north copy of the one.
Oh, the, yeah. You know, they had so much better handwriting than we do.
So help me, we get thank yous once in a while from a senior from Harvard, and it's printed. I don't think they can write.
But it's the North Face.
Yeah, that's 1900, mm-hmm. December 19th. Was there ever a post office in your store?
In Faison?
No, in Waitsfield.
No.
No.
Post office was always where the where the library building is while we were alive. But where was it before?
Before it was in the back of that building there, where George Billings ran the post office.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was in this store originally.
But it went in on this other side, way to the back. And then it moved from there to the library, the front part of the library, and then from there down to where the sign company is by Kehoe has the sign company, and then it came up to where it is now.
That's a terrific picture. You were.
I had a cover, an envelope. We had an estate down in Waitsfield that we had the property, and going through the personal property, I ran across this envelope with a stamp, East Warren.
No kidding.
Before we had an auction, and we moved everything up here because we couldn't have it down there. And we lost that. That's too bad, because somebody in Warren, I'm sure, would love that.
Oh, yeah.
The store and post office.
And that closed, 1902 or something, wasn't it?
I don't know how many. They had one in East Warren, but I don't know how many years that it was.
Because I guess East Warren at one point was healthier than Warren.
Yeah.
This was the house that burned, the second house that burned. This is another view of it, and right here by the end, they used to drive into the horse barn.
Oh, so you had an attached... I've been fascinated.
It was attached.
Mm-hmm. You know, because in the Champlain Valley, there are very few attached barns. But
oh, yeah?
Over here, there are some, like mm-hmm. Otis
yeah.
Wallace's barn
mm-hmm.
is attached.
Yeah, so
but this, you drove right past here. They used to come in on this side and right straight off. In, you can still see the foundation stones. In fact, we've got photos of family gatherings that show the stone wall just as it was then.
And we could pick out the certain stones and know exactly where they were standing.
This is the old couple before they died.
And this is again, Ezra.
Ezra and Annie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great grandparents.
Yeah.
Wonderful photograph. Now, when do you figure this was taken? Oh, it said, does it, oh no, it
Ezra
says as A-Z-R-O.
I don't think we know
Ezra
and
Anna. I don't know, but it wasn't too long before she died. I would think maybe 1910 or so.
Yeah. I thought most of the letters, maybe the last couple of letters, I thought maybe Annie was not really wandering, but maybe she
repeated herself a little.
I don't just remember. It seemed there was something about it. I thought that
she wasn't as well.
She wasn't quite as sharp as she
yeah.
had been earlier. And
who is this here?
Well, that was, let me see. That was Frank's wife, Morena, and this was a lady that was visiting them. So after Frank died in 1909, and you see, Grandma Bragg isn't with them, so this had to be after 1915.
Yeah.
It was probably before they left the farm. They left here in 1919.
Yeah, these are great.
But you see, it was quite a large house.
It's a big house.
Yeah. And that was the way to be if you had to have generations living together. Now, you can't, in a little ranch-type house, have two or three generations. But where you had the two or three stories and the grandparents had their couple of rooms and, you know,
how
it
many,
was a way of living.
How many generations were here then? Was it three? Two?
Must have been three.
Living here at that time?
Yeah.
If William lived with Ezra.
William and Ezra.
And then Frank was here.
And if Frank was here, and if Emily had died and young Emily was here, it
four.
Must have been four generations
yep.
at one time.
Okay,
here.
Now back up. Ezra and Anna, or Annie, were
great.
William was the first one.
Okay.
My great-great-grandfather.
All right.
Then comes Ezra and Annie.
Yeah.
My great-grandfather and grandmother. From them, we're talking about Frank now.
Okay.
That was Frank and Will, my grandfather, but they were on that level.
Okay.
And then Frank, and then Emily
Eaton. Well, Frank and Will and Emily were their three children. Emily died, three of
okay.
the four children. Emily died. So if the baby Emily was there, there would have been four
yeah.
generations at one time here.
Yeah, we get Emily and Emily Eaton mixed up.
No, Emily Eaton was adopted because Emily died? Or was Emily Eaton Emily's daughter?
Emily Eaton was Emily's daughter and was Anna's granddaughter.
I see.
So Emily
Eaton lived with Anna.
Yeah. See,
after
Emily.
Life.
Okay.
The first Emily died 6 or 8 days after her daughter was born of scarlet fever. So the grandmother took her right in and raised her here.
Mm.
So there would have been four generations, at least. I don't know whether Frank and Marina had any of their children here at that time or not, but
there would have been four.
Well, you almost needed that to work a farm, too,
yeah.
in those days.
Well, you did. You had to have two or three hired men, and you had to have, well, old Aunt Sarah Griggs, she was, you know, I guess probably now they'd say she had Alzheimer's, but she was beginning to lose her mind. But she was here, and she did the sewing, and it took a lot of hands to feed
ten
or a dozen people
yeah,
every day.
The meals. In the summertime, you got to start a fire, and
you've got to garden, and you've got to can and preserve.
And no running water.
Yeah.
No.
Did you have pump locks coming down here?
I think in one of those letters it talks about putting in the inside closet.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was after Frank and Annie had their 50th anniversary, I think, and they put in the inside closet in their quarters, wherever that was. I have an idea, probably. There was an outhouse out in the addition, the
horse barn, and whatever it was there.
Probably at that time.
They had to bring, they were brought inside. That was a.
And they speak of the coal spring, and down in the orchard there was a little spring there. And in the summertime they used to go and get the drinking water there because it was so icy cold.
Gosh, I can't wait to read this.
Yeah. Really is very interesting.